Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 34 degrees here in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Leanne Akers.
And I'm Chaz Jenkins.
This is the first person that I met that was part of me.
A Lexington family is mourning the death of two teens.
Heavy rain has caused mudslides in three Kentucky counties.
Human error may have caused infections in people who receive vaccines in the workplace.
A health insurance company is suing the state for rate cuts.
Lobbyist spending was the highest ever in Kentucky last year.
In sports, Rowan County tips off district tournament play tonight in Moorhead.
Bud Luke has the stock report.
Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 23 degrees. Stay tuned for an extended weather forecast after this news.
Sayre Upper School in Lexington released the names of three students involved in a fatal car accident on Sunday morning. 17-year-old Rowan Sanders and 15-year-old Neo Sanders were killed. The driver was 18-year-old Bobby Puckett. Mark Williams is the father of Neo Sanders and the stepfather of Rowan. He tells LEX 18, mourning his son is going to be difficult.
He was a bright kid. I mean, he had a heart on him. I mean, how does somebody go and move forward after something like you outlived your own son?
The school where the boys attended will have counselors available for grieving students and teachers.
Kentucky State Police were investigating after a Martin County woman was found dead following a fire. Authorities said officials were alerted about 9 a.m. by a 911 caller to a structure fire along Kentucky Highway 292 in the Lovely community. Officials tell WYMT when the fire was put out, 70-year-old Kathy Runyon was found dead inside the structure. Authorities said an autopsy would be performed Tuesday at the medical examiner's office in Frankfort.
A crash involving multiple vehicles on Interstate 64 westbound shut down traffic in Franklin County today. According to WKYT, the crash occurred on the 51-mile marker in Frankfort and left two people dead. The accident involved a tractor-trailer, a pickup, and a car. Police have detoured traffic and authorities are asking drivers to avoid the area. The names of the victims have not yet been released.
Heavy rain across the region triggered mudslides in three Kentucky counties. 911 dispatchers tell WYMT that a portion of Highway 699 in Perry County has been shut down due to a mudslide. Officials are working to find information on the driver of a car that may have been pushed off the road by the slide. Crews on the scene said cleanup will take several hours, and it is uncertain when the road will reopen. Floyd County Police say a portion of Kentucky 1428 in Prestonsburg is closed due to the instability of a mudslide. Police have been working to divert traffic since Sunday afternoon. A mudslide beside Kentucky 72 in Harlan County has been contained with concrete barriers. Residents fear the barriers will overflow. Harlan County's judge executive says county officials are monitoring the slide.
A Lexington organization is calling for action after a controversial incident inside the Fayette Mall. Police say the physical altercation happened on February 2nd near H&M after a teen became non-compliant. Questions surrounded the video recorded and shared to social media by the teenager's father. Sarah Williams of Cooperation Lexington tells WKYT the officer's actions were malicious and inappropriate.
He should have assessed the situation better because in doing so, and the father was present, and possibly having that conversation with the father there.
Police say the officers were working off duty when mall security asked them to investigate a group of disorderly teens.
Infectious disease experts say poor practices in vaccine delivery are the likely cause of infections reported by some people who received vaccine shots at their places of employment. Kentucky health officials are investigating a link between the infections and a private Kentucky company hired to deliver vaccinations in the workplace. Location Vaccination, based in Mount Sterling, administered vaccines to staff at other companies in 22 cities and towns in Kentucky, Ohio, and Indiana. A spokesperson for the Kentucky Department of Public Health tells Ohio Valley Resource most of the vaccines in question were delivered in a workplace setting and that state investigators are still working to determine the scope of the problem. The owners of Location Vaccination did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Location Vaccination provided services in Lexington, Louisville, Paris, Maysville, Mount Sterling, and Winchester.
Passport Health Plan claims that state rate cuts have affected it so dramatically that the Louisville-based nonprofit Medicaid Managed Care Company could be insolvent by March and subject to state takeover. The abrupt filing of the lawsuit on Friday in Franklin Circuit Court signals the collapse of extensive efforts to resolve a dispute with the State Cabinet for Health and Family Services over the cuts enacted last year to the company's Medicaid business. According to the Courier-Journal, the suit asks that a judge bar the state from imposing the cuts that date back to July and repay millions of dollars in cuts for the past 8 months, cuts that threaten the company's existence as well as its new headquarters under construction in West Louisville. Passport is the only nonprofit health plan among five companies that provide managed care for most of Kentucky's 1.3 million Medicaid enrollees. The other four are all national, for-profit health insurance companies. The case has been assigned to Judge Thomas Wingate. We'll have more of your region's headlines right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from Rutabaker's Bakery and Cafe, across from St. Clair Healthcare on Flemingsburg Road in Moorhead. Rutabaker's has made from scratch cakes, pies and cookies, scones, braids and muffins. Lunch menu features sandwiches, soups and salads. Rutabaker's Bakery and Cafe is open Tuesday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Takeout orders and lunch reservations at 780-4282 or online at rutabakers.com.
The widow of a deceased Kentucky Utilities worker has filed a negligence lawsuit against the company. According to LEX 18, William Everman passed away when the dump truck he was controlling came in contact with high-voltage power lines at a construction site. Everman's widow, Vicki Everman, filed the suit Thursday in Fayette Circuit Court. Everman claims that Kentucky Utilities, LG&E, failed to de-energize the power lines before allowing the contractors to work on the site, which put workers in danger. The court date for the lawsuit has not been decided.
Lobbyist spending in Kentucky shattered records again in 2018. John Schaaf with the Legislative Ethics Commission reports another all-time record, $23.1 million spent on lobbying.
That really shot the record past the previous high, which had been set the year before, which was about $20.8 million.
The top spender nod goes to Altria, the parent company of Philip Morris. They spent over $550,000, or 43% more than in the last 60-day legislative session, hoping to sway lawmakers on a proposed cigarette tax hike. The General Assembly ultimately raised the tax by 50 cents.
A bill in the Kentucky legislature proposes improvements to mental health resources for Kentucky students. Senate Bill 1 is sponsored by Senator Max Wise of Campbellsville. The bill calls for providing mental health professionals in every school, one for every 1,500 students. Chris Barrier is the director of law enforcement for Montgomery County Schools. He says lawmakers behind the bill were affected by the tragedy of the Marshall County school shooting in 2018.
And so what they did was they started looking at realistic ways of how they can make kids safer in schools. And so over the past year, when they looked at legislation for Senate Bill 1, they took a very holistic approach at how to keep kids safe, how to have early interventions in place.
According to a 2017 survey from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 29% of high school students in Kentucky have experienced symptoms of depression, and 15% said they've had suicidal thoughts.
The voting rights of convicted felons in Kentucky may be restored through a recently filed bill. The bill states that if a convicted felon has completed their sentence, including probation and parole, their right to vote would automatically be restored. Democratic State Senator of Louisville, Morgan McGarvey, sponsored the bill.
We are denying 300,000 Kentuckians of that right today. That is wrong. Even more shamefully, we're denying 1 in 4 African Americans in Kentucky the right to vote.
The bill would not restore voting rights for Kentuckians convicted of murder, rape, treason, or election fraud. The measure, if passed, would eventually be put on a ballot for voters across the Commonwealth to make the final decision. Kentucky is one of only two states in the country that permanently removes the voting rights of felons.
A survivor from a Cincinnati mass shooting is desperately fighting for a new law that would add a checkpoint for gun owners in Kentucky. The Red Flag Bill was introduced Friday by Kentucky Senate Minority Leader Morgan McGarvey of Louisville. The bill allows extreme risk protection orders that would allow guns to be taken from people that could potentially pose a threat to others. Whitney Austin, a survivor from the 5th Third Rampage in Cincinnati last year, says there were warning signs for the Kroger gunman last year that might have been red flagged.
I almost felt in a way that I was deserving of being involved in that mass shooting.
13 states already have an extreme risk protection order law. 8 of those states joined the list since the Parkland shooting last year.
School lockdown drills are becoming more common, and now parents are wondering what kind of effect they really have on young children. Active shooter drills have only increased since the Parkland school shooting last year. However, some groups have come forward to say these drills are having a negative effect on younger children. Local mental health professional Jen Smith says these drills are necessary.
I think that we have to, you know, prepare our children for those types of things. I think that a child who's been in a house fire could be triggered by a fire drill, you know. So, but they're still important for our kiddos to know kind of what to do in that situation.
Smith says as long as school shootings exist, it's important that children be taught how to handle them.
Floyd Central High School students are learning about current events and empathy through a virtual classroom. Floyd Central High School students have been using a program called Narrative 4 to talk with people in other countries over Skype. Preston Crace is a sophomore. He tells WYMT Narrative 4 helps students be more mindful of how they talk with each other.
Narrative 4 is trying to, I guess, hit the problem at the roots and having our young leaders be more cooperative and willing to see each other and hear each other.
Crace says while all people might be different, they also have lots of things in common. Taking a look at the weather tonight, Moorhead, 34 degrees, Flemingsburg, 33 degrees, Maysville, 35, Ashland, 36, Grayson and Inez, 35, Mount Sterling, 34 degrees, Lexington, 35 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 24, Tuesday, a 10% chance of rain after 5 p.m., partly sunny with a high near 41, Tuesday night, 100% chance of rain and snow, becoming all rain after 2 a.m., lows around 33.
On our feature segment this afternoon, a Letcher County nonprofit has been awarded a grant by Kentucky Power. WMKY's Jacob Lindberg reports.
We use artistic disciplines to approach questions of storytelling from the Appalachian region.
Alex Gibson is the executive director of Apple Shop, an organization which uses art and culture to approach stories and issues in central Appalachia. The nonprofit was recently awarded a $75,000 American Electric Power Foundation grant, which provides for Apple Shop's Appalachian Media Institute.
It will allow us to purchase and implement a 3D printing curriculum, and it's the height of technology right now. It's a very interesting piece of technology that we're excited to be able to share in the coal fields.
Gibson says the institute invites young creatives to study and produce media after school and during the summer.
You know, when I grew up in eastern Kentucky, I didn't have access to the best computers and the best technology. And so it's an opportunity to be able to introduce young people to that at an early age and hopefully spark some creative instincts and help them along the path of being competitive in the future job markets.
Gibson says Apple Shop is home to unique voices.
We tell stories that commercial cultural industries don't tell. We challenge stereotypes with Appalachian voices and visions for the future. We celebrate the diversity of the region, not just ethnic diversity, which is often underestimated, but also our cultural and political diversity.
He says the conversations Apple Shop initiates are spearheaded by the creators. He says projects in different rural communities have highlighted a variety of topics, all spurred by the people living there.
we would do a play in the same way. We would do a film in the same way. The actual trick is not the art, not the medium through which we tell the story. It's the fact that we're trying to tell stories from a first-person perspective.
He equates it to a sort of artistic open forum.
You know, most artistic disciplines are like that. You don't really have management telling an artist what to be inspired by. But the artist could be so inspired by issues of environment. They could be inspired by women's liberation. They could be inspired by economic downturn or the opportunities for a new economic future. And those last ones that I mentioned are typically our focus nowadays is on the economy.
Gibson says Appleshop has always been tied to the economic story of the region.
When Appleshop was started in 69, it was started by a grant as part of the War on Poverty by the Office of Economic Opportunity. And so even our initiation as an arts collective was an economic response.
He says the grant from Kentucky Power will aid in furthering education in the region. Reporting for WMKY News, I'm Jacob Lindberg.
It's 4:46 and 34 degrees here on the beautiful campus of Morehead State University. I'm your Mountain Edition host, Leanne Akers, here with Chaz Jenkins, and we're coming to you live from the Larry Netherton Studio here in Breckenridge Hall. We're so glad that you've joined us on this Monday afternoon. Cody Robinson has sports after this timeout.
Support for MSPR comes from the Recreation and Wellness Center at Morehead State University. The Wilson Bowling Lanes and the Laughlin Building are open to the public, with six lanes for birthday parties, private groups, lane by the hour, or per game pricing. Also available is Cosmic Bowling for birthday parties with disco and black lights for that glow-in-the-dark experience. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 5 to 9 p.m., Sunday and Monday by reservation. More information and reservations at 606-776-3457.
Rowan County boys kick off district tournament play at home tonight. For WMKY Sports, I'm Cody Robinson. The Rowan County boys team kicks off the 61st district action tonight as they face off with Menifee. The Vikings are coming off a 71-51 loss at Mason County on Friday night, which moved the team to 23-5 in regular season action. The Wildcats are 9-21 on their season, looking to knock Rowan out of postseason play. Head coach Sean Thacker says it will be nice to host the tournament in Morehead.
It would definitely will be comfortable being at home, although we didn't play there a whole lot during the course of the year. But, you know, any time that you can play a district tournament home, you feel like you have a little bit of advantage, home court advantage of just to be at your school, getting to have your crowd will be there more so than if you're traveling on the road.
Tip-off tonight in Morehead is set for 6 p.m. Bath County faces Fleming County in the 61st District nightcap tonight in Morehead. The Panthers are favored to win the matchup since they have a better district record. Fleming beat the Wildcats during regular season play 56-51 last month. Another district tournament action tonight, West Carter is hosting the 62nd District Tournament. The Elliott County boys will face Morgan County at 7 p.m. Elliott County is favored to win the region. They ended the regular season at 22-3. Lewis County is hosting the 63rd District. The girls' teams open the tournament tonight. Russell faces Greenup at 6 p.m. and Lewis and Raceland tip off at 8. In the 64th District, Ashland Blazer faces off with Rose Hill Christian at 6 p.m. and the girls of Boyd County and Fairview face off at 7:45. Both those games are being played at Ashland Blazer. The Lady Vikings were in the gym this afternoon. Rowan's gals face off with Fleming County tomorrow night in the first round of the 61st District Tournament. Head coach Matt Stokes says his team will be looking to shake off their 86-47 loss to Boyd County that closed regular season play on Friday.
I don't think we played very well. It's probably the one time this year I was disappointed in how we played. You know, we told them at halftime there's two things we wanted them to work on was layups and rebounding, and that was it. I mean, we were right there with them. We said the first 2 minutes of the game, we're going to determine whether we get blown out or we have a good game with them. And we came out flat. They got up 20 points real quick. And after that, it just kind of fell apart.
Rowman is 2-0 with Fleming so far this season. Tip-off Tuesday in Morehead is set for 6 p.m. The Morehead State women's golf team began season play this morning in the Amelia Island Collegiate. The two-day event hosted by Jacksonville takes place at the Amelia National Golf Club in Fernandina Beach, Florida. The AIC marks a return to stroke play for the Eagles after having opened the spring portion of the schedule with match play at the Mid-American Match Play Challenge. Morehead State picked up two victories, defeating Ohio and Western Illinois. The 54-hole event began with a shotgun start this morning. Two rounds were scheduled for today, and the final round will be played tomorrow. The two-day event features 16 teams, including Cincinnati, Daytona State, Florida Gulf Coast, Georgia Southern, Georgia State, Jacksonville, Jacksonville State, Marshall, North Florida, Sam Houston State, Samford, UAB, USC Upstate, Western Kentucky, and Winthrop. Live stats will be available through GolfStat, while updates will be available through at MSU Eagles Live on Twitter. After putting together three top 10 finishes during the fall portion of the team's slate, Morehead State Men's Golf opened up the spring campaign at the Atlantic 10 Match Play Championships. The two-day, three-round event began today at the Weston Hills Country Club in Weston, Florida. Morehead State was picked fourth in the Ohio Valley Conference preseason poll. They faced St. Bonaventure in play's opening round. In the event's second round, the Eagles would face either Florida Atlantic or St. Joseph's. Also competing in the eight-team event are George Mason, Oakland, Dayton, and host George Washington. Updates throughout the event will be available through MSU Eagles Live on Twitter. Morehead State University's rifle team is hoping to earn a berth in the NCAA championships. WMKY's Logan Pemberton has the story.
Sierra Crum and Brandon Breyer each shot combined personal best totals to lead Morehead State Rifle to two more school records Saturday at the NCAA qualifier match at the University of Kentucky. The Eagles scored a 46-74 aggregate total, a school record that included a school record 23-58 in air rifle. Crum fired a personal best 5.92 in air and totaled her best ever combined score at 11.49. Breyer, who shot a personal best 192 in small bore standing, finished with a 5.86 at that gun, which is also a top score for him. His 195 in kneeling also allowed him to record a new combined high water mark of 11.71. The NCAA selection show for rifle is Tuesday, and should the Eagles get in or any individuals be selected, the chance to vie for the NCAA's top trophy in rifle takes place March 8th through 9th in Morgantown, West Virginia. For WMKY Sports, I'm Logan Pemberton.
And finally in sports, the University of Kentucky men's team moved up a spot in the week's AP Top 25 college basketball poll. The shift comes after the Wildcats took down number 1 Tennessee on Saturday. Duke reclaimed the number 1 spot. The Blue Devils earned 58 of 64 first-place votes in Monday's poll to earn a third stint at the top this season. Gonzaga moved up a spot to number 2, followed by Virginia. Nevada, Michigan, North Carolina, Houston, and Michigan State rounded out the top 10. LSU made the week's biggest jump, climbing 6 spots to number 13 after last week's win at Kentucky. Kansas State fell 5 spots to number 23 for the biggest slide. For the first time in the season, no new teams joined the top 25. And that's your look at sports. For WMKY News, I'm Cody Robinson.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Basketball welcomes Murray State for an evening doubleheader on Thursday, February 28th. The women's game begins at 5:05, and the men's action tips off at 7:35. Tickets available from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Wall Street is closed for President's Day, so Bud Luke will be returning to Mountain Edition tomorrow. This afternoon, we're going to take a look at House Bill 34, which has been introduced in the Ohio legislature to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. A new study says that would benefit about 2 million workers. Ohio News Connection's Mary Sherman has that story.
Ohio's minimum wage workers are earning 25 cents more per hour this year than last. But some lawmakers and policy analysts contend $8.55 an hour still doesn't cut it. A 2006 ballot measure set Ohio's minimum hourly wage at $6.85 and indexed it to inflation. But Michael Shields with Policy Matters Ohio says that doesn't cover the cost of living for many families. His group's latest research shows wage growth and economic growth are out of sync. It means Ohio minimum wage workers earn 28% less than their counterparts in 1968 when wages were at their peak value.
In Ohio, the most common jobs, the 10 jobs that employ the largest number of workers, 6 of those are paying a wage that's so low that people are dependent on food aid if they're supporting a family of three.
House Bill 34 introduced last week calls for a $12 per hour wage floor in 2020, then a $1 bump each year until hitting $15 in 2023. A similar bill introduced last year didn't succeed. Opponents argued that it would be costly for business and result in job losses. Shields says the research is mixed, with most studies revealing little effect on overall job numbers.
It's meaningful when we see wages increase and employers not responding by decreasing jobs. What that means is that low-wage workers are already producing the wealth for their employers and for the economy. They're just not bargaining for it successfully to capture their share of it.
Shields says about 1.5 million workers would directly benefit from a higher minimum wage, along with another 450,000 indirectly, as employers adjust their overall pay scales. Shields adds that increased business costs due to higher wages are minimal. For example, the Greater Cleveland Food Bank's lowest paid employees were given a 21% pay hike when the organization raised its minimum wage to $14 an hour in 2017. He says operating costs increased by just 0.5%.
When we're looking at how this impacts organizations, how it impacts businesses, the proportional benefit to folks who would be impacted by higher wages is much, much greater than the relative costs that employers are taking on to make this a reality.
The Cleveland Clinic, Nationwide, and Amazon are among Ohio companies raising hourly pay to $15. And last week, Illinois lawmakers approved a $15 minimum wage by 2024, similar to laws in California, Massachusetts, and New York. I'm Mary Sherman, Ohio News Connection. This story was produced in association with Media in the Public Interest and funded in part by the George Gunn Foundation.
Support for MSPR comes from the Community Recycling Center in Moorhead. Located at 325 Triplett Street near the Moorhead City Park, the Community Recycling Center offers a 24-hour drop-off service for a variety of recyclables, including cardboard, aluminum and steel cans, one and two numbered plastics, books, newspaper, magazines, mixed and shredded paper. The Community Recycling Center is a partnership of the City of Moorhead, Rowan County, and Moorhead State University. More information at 784-1250.
Taking a final look at the weather tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 24 degrees. Tuesday, a 10% chance of rain after 5 p.m., partly sunny with a high near 41. Tuesday night, 100% chance of rain and snow, becoming all rain after 2 a.m., lows around 33. Wednesday, 100% chance of rain before 1 p.m., then showers after 1 p.m., windy with a high near 49. And Wednesday night, 90% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm before 10 p.m., lows around 41 degrees. Taking a final look at the listening area temperatures, in Lexington, 35 degrees, Inez, 35 degrees, Ashland, 36, Paintsville, 37, Flemingsburg, 33, and in Moorhead, it's currently 34 degrees.
Taking a look at some events coming up in the region, the Moorhead History and Railroad Museum offers vintage displays, artifacts, model trains, photographs, videos, and guided tours. The museum is located across from the Moorhead Conference Center on East 1st Street. Open to the public, and admission is free. Hours are Friday and Saturdays from noon to 4 p.m.
The Camden Carroll Library and the Eagle Diversity Education Center will host an African-American read-in from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Tuesday, February 19th at Moorhead State University. Public readings of African-American writers will be presented. The event is free and open to the public.
MSU's Black History Month film and discussion series will present The Green Book at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, February 19th, in Room 2 of Breckenridge Hall at Moorhead State University. The film is based on an African-American pianist on tour of the South during the 1960s. The event is free and open to the public.
MSU's Black History Month film and discussion series will present Monsters and Men at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, February 26th, in Room 2 of Breckenridge Hall at Moorhead State University. Film screening is free and open to the public.
A blood drive sponsored by the Kentucky Blood Center will be held at the Moorhead Walmart from 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Friday, March 1st. Donors must be able to provide a photo ID, be at least 17 years of age or 16 with parental consent, weigh at least 110 pounds, and be in general good health. Every donor will receive a free T-shirt. And that's going to do it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from Tanner Boyd, Joe Lewis, Cassidy Stearman, Haley Stidham, Grant Johnson, Keneally Roberts, Naya Indweza, Tanny Wallingford, Jack Cottle, Greg Jenkins, and Paul Hitchcock. WUKY's Josh James, Ohio News Connection's Mary Sherman, and our feature segment today came from WMKY's own Jacob Lindberg. This is Moorhead State Public Radio. WMKY Moorhead and translator W202BH in Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Chaz Jenkins and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Leanne Akers for WMKY News. All Things Considered is coming up next. It's 5 o'clock.